two of you that were going to do the presentation. Use your last few minutes left. You can start.
No, you're not here. You're not here. I'm going to see one person.
Thank you, the Honorable Chairperson and members of the committee. I'm going to start first by looking at the strategy of mine water flow. For this project, we are actually looking at the impact of the surface and groundwater within the underground mine workings of housing or the water drive. To also manage the decanting of the mine polluted water, to predict and prevent the harm to the environment, to apportion pollution sources and liabilities, and ultimately to come up with the strategy to deal with this. We have our major activities that are planned for 2014-2015, and for that we have proposed canals. These are the three that are listed there for the implementation of the ingress control for this financial year within the Eastern Basin. We're also looking at the restoration of the natural spring, in this case, the Van Rijn Pond in the East Rand. And we are continuing with the feasibility studies for the ingress control measure for the Coles Dam, Hadal Dam, and Alexander Dam in the East Rand. The other task that is also continuing is the mine water monitoring. This is the groundwater monitoring in the central branch, and this is the city monitoring facilitated by my colleague here, Ms. Kroger. But we thought as an organization, we should go beyond just the water trend, and we look at the areas that could be impacted by AMD in South Africa. The project will actually take place in the whole of the country, but these are the areas that we have only looked at to this point as of the financial year 2011 to 2013. When you look into this map, where you see the red dots, these are the areas that are highly impacted by AMD. Now, the plan from here is, since we know which areas are affected by AMD, how then to come up with constructed land and ultimately have the water that is channeled through the limestone drain. This is typically what you are seeing on your right. These are called passive treatment technologies. And of course, also when you look at what you are seeing at the bottom here, it's also the AMD that is sitting on the ground. And ultimately what we'd like to come up with is wetland rehabilitation, where we are going to have a similar picture to what you are seeing on the right, where plants are going to be growing. With this type of project, what we are aiming at is job creation for the community. Next slide, please. And this, you know, when you look at on your left-hand side, especially at the top, these are typical conditions that you find around housing. Ultimately, with that, when you look into the right, we'd like to come up with reshaping and vegetation of an area, and ultimately convert the picture that you are seeing on your top left into the top right. These are typical of what you see in the Fraser Dump. I think most of you know about it. It's in housing. And also to take some of these material and say, can we treat them and make them to form bricks for low-cost housing? This is turning a problem into a solution for the country. Next slide. This is inefficient rehabilitation. This is job primarization. The other project that we are working on is on the management of the derelict and unalive mines. This is working in conjunction with MINTEC. This project started in 2005 to 2008, and this is when, at the time when they identified the 6,000 DNO mines. We have since started with field investigations to verify some of these sites and ownership. Next slide. The objectives of this project is really to maintain, update, and strengthen the database to improve this database so that we can link it to the DMR database, the licensing system. And also with this database, we want to facilitate a better estimation of the contingent liability with regard to these ownerless mines. And to come up with the rehabilitation plans and dose of quantities of those highly prioritized sites. Field investigation will also continue on an ongoing basis to identify those areas that we think are of redness and to forward this information to the department so that INTEC can then help with the prioritization. The last item is the dangerous of mine holdings. These are the shafts that are very close to communities and they pose immediate threat to the human safety. The next slide. Our deliverables for 2014 are as follows. Continuous improvement on the database. It is a web-based, by the way. Access to the department has been given. They are able to see what progress we are making on the database. We're also planning to come up with passive treatment technologies that you've seen in the previous project. We're working together on that one. And ultimately, looking to the cost estimate for the prison concept for the Emalahleni, rehabilitation of the Emalahleni coal abandoned mine for land subsidence and spontaneous fires. And on an annual basis, we review the DMR liability. Next slide. Typically, this is a Lilia mine that was cleared last year. This is an old gold mine that is close to residential area, as you can see on our picture here on the top right. And we cleared the site and landscaped it. Now it's looking better. It's a safe environment for the close by communities. Next slide. This is typical of the shaft that we closed on the left. And ultimately, what you see, there is just a monument that says to you, there was a shaft here. Next. We, in addition to the national projects that we are involved in, we also look into doing projects outside South Africa to complement the income that we get from our funds. This is the list of the projects that we are working on. Next slide. Yes. It is time for Africa. This is the 35th IGC, which is the International Congress of Geology. It was last held in Africa, in Algiers, in 1962. Now, after these many years, it's coming to South Africa. It is going to be held in Cape Town in 2016. We have the local organizing committee that has been formed, and the Section 21 company also to help in assisting with the project of making sure that Congress becomes successful. And for this conference to be successful, really it shows that we also now receiving a full support from our government. And this was indicated by the previous Minister Shabangu, who addressed the delegates at the IGC 34th closing function. Thank you.
Thank you, Honorable Chair and Honorable Members. I'll be giving you a brief presentation on human capital for the Council for Geoscience. The strategy here is anchored on the following pillars: to continue to transform the organization and also retaining skilled scientists, because these are the core for our function, and fast-tracking the training of young scientists, especially looking at the previously disadvantaged. And the training programs include bursaries, both for part-time and full-time, and also internship program. This we're doing in collaboration with MQA, and also mentorship program and geological mapping field school. The staff profile of the institution, as indicated by race, you can see the brown is black and the yellow is white. We also included the composition of the foreign nationals that we are using within the Council for Geoscience, particularly looking at rescue. These are assisting us in training and developing the young scientists. Next slide. This again is our profile agenda, indicating male and female. And next slide. Now, coming to bursary intake analysis, these were full-time studies bursary. These are who are in university. Through the years, starting from 2010, that is the progress, where we had a dip 2010, that's following the financial crisis, and we embarked on a cost control to survive, hence we had a lowest number. Now we're slowly building up again. And the same applies also to the budget for full-time bazaars. This is how it is projected. Next slide. Now the demographic composition of the bazaars per gender is indicated here. For example, now we are having 59% male and 41% female. The internship program. This program is showing that every year we're growing in attracting young scientists. As I already said, working together with the MQA, these are going to form core of the organization moving forward. At the moment, we are having 56. That's the total that we're having right now. Correction for the previous figure which was stated. And the aim here is to mentor them, develop them, so that they be ready for taking over the activities within the Council for Geoscience. I also mentioned the Geological Field School, which was initiated in 2005. This is based in the Limpopo province for geological offices. The here is a one-year modular program where we take young geologists who are qualified graduates from university, come to the Council for Geoscience, and are checking through the paces of how to map professionally and technically. And these skills are very useful because as an organization, we need those people who can really map properly and also who can compete when we also go out and begin work elsewhere. We're in the process of acquiring accreditation from the MQA for this field school. Thank you.
Thank you very much. We are done. Okay, honorable members, any questions of clarity? Honorable Larima? Anybody else? Honorable Mafoyo and Honorable Mandel.
Thanks, Mr. Chair. I could ask a lot, I'll cut it to two. What provisions of the 2010 legislation can you not perform because of lack of budget? And in a related question, if and when the President signs the new version of the MPRDA, how are you going to be saddled with additional responsibilities? How many of those additional responsibilities will you be able to perform in the absence of additional budget?
Thank you, Chairperson. Let me welcome the presentation. My question is based on the bursaries. I just want to understand how do you allocate your bursary? Is it through all the provinces? If yes, how? If not, and how do you get to the people who are in a very rural areas? Thank you.
Thanks, Chair. I only had two questions of clarity, Chair, but Honorable Mafolo has covered me on the other question in terms of bursaries. This is quite a scarce area of focus and skill. And I'd like to also understand in terms of those bursaries, what happens when the beneficiaries have completed? Do they go back to serve in their places of origin, or do they escalate and stay in those areas they were studying? But there's a tendency of these bursaries. You give bursaries to students, so let's say in Tata, and they come to Cape Town to study here, and once they complete their space of or focus in terms of job offering is in Cape Town, they don't want to return, and you are not really building skill or capacity in that area of Umtata. Hence, it brings me to my second question, where there is the slide that shows a part of South Africa left white, and it is of concern. Why is that part of South Africa, predominantly part of the Eastern Cape, the Free State, Northwest, Limpopo and Mpumalanga, if it was are still very much left white? Is that means there are no resources in those areas, or there haven't been actual studies done, since most of those areas would be our former homelands? So if we can gain clarity on that. Thanks, Chair.
Those hands are You will take the question, Honourable Matala, and Honourable Mdaga, and then Honourable Malema.
thank you, Chair. Mine is with regard to the aging infrastructure, as to whether do they have a plan to address this aging equipment that they have.
Thank you, Chairperson. Mine is just a clarity seeking about these bazaars. What criteria do you use? There is a part-time and full-time. So if you can clarify furthermore. Thanks.
Mine is very simple, Chair. In one of the presentations, you presented a map with old names. I don't know why you are doing that. Petersburg, Nelspruit, and you are government entity that used very wrong colonial names before us here, when we've got new names.
You will share the question.
Chair, for you, let me see how many I can answer before I will also refer to my colleagues. The provision of the 2010 amendment to the Geoscience Act is essentially four of those. it is the clauses that give the organization the responsibility to act as a national advisory in terms of geohazards. It is the review of all development on dolomitic terrain land, in particular in Gauteng, of course, where we have big problems with around Pretoria and Johannesburg. this will require the CGS, the Council for Geoscience, to play a bit of a regulatory role. And that responsibility was, at the time, it was cost, it was a proposal was made. But until such time, because of this additional influx, as it is, the organization is already reviewing in the order of about 400 reports on an annual basis. These are geotechnical reports. But to cope with this much larger scope, additional resources, also in terms of staff, will be required. So in particular those, then with that is an appeals committee, because as the organization plays a role as a regulator, of course you will find the developers will not always agree with the findings, and then there must be a process to appeal, and that whole appeals process will be driven through an appeals committee that must be formed through external, using external expertise as well. The lodging of information at the Council for Geoscience, both in terms of geotechnical but also exploration reports done by industry at the time when a particular company would relinquish its license, all that information will have to be deposited with the organization. It's the It's to turn all of that information into a digital form that is easily accessible to other companies then, other organizations that would want to explore a particular area further. That will have to be available on the internet. Those are essentially the clauses that have been excluded in the 2010 amendment. It was signed into law in July 2012, if I recall correctly, but still with that exclusion. Then, Chair, the additional responsibility of the organization with the MPRDA, that would bring us into the field of what I would call conventional and unconventional oil and gas. The organization as it currently stands, as we've just explained, scope is already very wide in terms of minerals, hazards, water, environmental, engineering. This will bring and require the creation of a whole new competency within the organization. And I think the CFO will agree with me that we cannot tackle that implementation without additional resources. It's just not feasible, firstly because we do not have that particular expertise within the organization. We would have to through some process, recruit that expertise. The comment about the areas left open on the maps, Chair, I should have explained that a little bit at the time. The entire South Africa has been covered at a particular scale. Unfortunately, in geology, you can start with one scale and you can gradually narrow that scale till you can really focus on particular deposits or areas of interest. South Africa is fortunate both in terms of geology, geophysics. It's been covered, but at a high not at a high resolution, at a lower resolution. For instance, the entire country was flown at a 1 kilometer line spacing in the 70s and 80s. What we've now embarked on is the high resolution gathering of data. Now we're flying at a 200 millimeter line spacing. And what we have done is we've prioritized the areas of particular interest. But of course, again, the budget does not allow a program that we can start and complete in 5 years. If we continue at the current rate of resources that we have, it will probably take 30 years. Hence, we have to and we have to prioritize, and we cover small areas. We have recently determined a budget to, in fact, address this problem over a five-year period so that we can cover the entire country, both geochemistry, geology, geophysics. But that budget comes to just over R1 billion over 5 years. So it's a huge investment that the government would have to look at and consider to do this in a very compressed period of time. The aging infrastructure, yes, Chair, indeed, we do have what is known as the improvement plans, the high-level improvement plans of the organization. And it's a rolling recapitalization plan of the organization. So every year we know exactly what we need to replace and the cost associated with that. As the CFO, however, earlier said, that often we find that in that particular year, because of reprioritization of the funding we have, we do not get to the point where we actually recapitalize everything that was planned for that year, and hence we then roll it over to the next financial year. We'll certainly look into the comment about the maps with the old names, Chair. We do use the information we get from the surveys department. That's our base for all our maps. But we'll give that a very careful review to not have old information on our maps. Chair, I will now pass to Mr. Ramakwedi for the questions on the bursaries.
Thank you, Mr. Chairperson and honorable members. As far as bursaries are concerned, we also operate similar to what Mintek was saying. We start by looking at those who are doing second year at university already, because previously we also were faced with the same challenge where those who were in first year were not succeeding. However, we also do have roadshows to schools where we do identify the bright young ones, particularly when we do participate in the National Science Week with the Department of Science and Technology and also DMS. And in as far as the adverts are concerned, we advertise in the papers and also have roadshows to universities. And that's how we attract those who are coming to study and with utilizing Council for Geoscience money. And what happens when they complete, they go back to their place of origin. What happens here, we do offer bursaries to students. When they complete, they are employed within the Council for Geoscience, where we do have regional office in Pretoria, plus six other provinces. That's where they are distributed. And the bursaries, what criteria for part-time and full-time? Part-time studies is normally only for those who are currently employees within the Council for Geoscience, who are working and also studying part-time. Full-time is mostly for students who are still studying at the university before they are employed within the university, employed within the Council for Geoscience. On exceptional cases, maybe if the Council for Geoscience look at a particular skill where one full-time employee can be taken to go and study full-time. That's all.
Mr. Chairman, in the absence of further questions...
Wait. Is that a further follow-up, Honorable Mutar? I thought, Honorable Malem, but let me not speak. I thought he said they were using the information they take from the stats on surveys that they have. That's what they use. But in future, they are going to look at that and not use those old names that they came to present here. But I'm sure they can confirm. Okay. The only thing I want to, you wanted a follow-up.
Thank you, Chairperson. You are saying you do the road shows to the universities. My question is, do you mean all the universities in South Africa?
Honorable members, yes, we do to all universities in South Africa, also paying particular attention to the universities which are formerly disadvantaged universities as well, where we want to ensure that we do target people who are coming from disadvantaged environments.
Okay. You must come. The only thing I want to just make as an observation, and you must go and look at it, your transformation approach might come back to catch up with you in future. You seem to be more concentrated on putting a more men, both in your recruitment policy, you've got more men that you have put, I assume, black and Africans in particular, and lesser women. Same thing in your bursaries. It's the same thing. There seems to be more men that have got access to your bursaries more than young women that are supposed. I'm saying that's the information you gave, and that you, because whatever you do with your EE processes, it must also take into consideration that transforming is not just about reducing the in terms of the it must take into consideration gender imperatives also. why I just wanted to make that observation.
Chair, you wanted to make a word of in conclusion, yes, and maybe just to cover the part of the question you raised in terms of gender. We do target ladies a lot. I think what we have to bear in mind is that most of the work we do is actually in the bush, and that becomes a bit of a challenge to some ladies. But we do have we do have ladies that like the job.
You know why I was making that figure as a comment? It's simple because I knew you are not going. Once you go there, please, can you make a summary of your conclusion? You see, that's why I was. Can you?
All right, that's withdrawn.
Yeah,
that's withdrawn.
Just do your report.
But just finally, just to thank you for the opportunity to present, and maybe just like MINTEC, extend our invitation to visit the Council for Geoscience, especially to view our core, you know, thousands of kilometers of core, to see how that is transformed into geological data, to visit the seismology department, to see how real-time data is received from the different stations, and also to visit the geophysics department where data is integrated with geology, geochemistry, and Landsat data, and also to see the various geological libraries we've got and the museum, and maybe finally the field school where we train these people. Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Okay. Thank you very much. Diamonds, precious metals, the regulator. You are on the podium. I'm trying my 11th best. Please, the next ones that are coming, when the one finishes with the presentation, be ready to lock on your own so that we don't start the process of trying to work out with computer. The computer is alone here.
Thank you, Honorable Chair, and Honorable Members of the Committee.
No, you can't address us sitting there. Are you part of the regulator?
Yes, sir, but I'm the chairperson, and the presentation is being made by the executive.
You must be a little bit closer to me. The advantage of this chair, the advantage of this chair is because you are much closer. You can sit there on that privileged chair, please, so that honorable members can also be closer to you. Don't know.
However, it is not a problem. Thank you very much for the opportunity to take on the strategic plan of the South African Diamonds and Precious Metals Regulator. The team that I'm with is led by the CEO, Mr. Levi Rappel, and Ms. Linda Mushe, who is the company secretary, if not the gentleman, and Mr. Sibusiso Mantagazi, next to the CEO, and Mr. Joseph Mpafudi, who is our transformational officer. So they will be presenting to yourselves. I've just accompanied them to ensure that we carry out as requested the request by the portfolio committee. Thank you very much.
Okay, continue.
Because of all this movement, I have not introduced myself.
I took for granted you are the chair. Okay.
Yes. A member would like to know the name. The name is Nombulelo Mkhumane, and I chair the regulator.
Okay.
Thank you.
You're welcome. You can continue, CEO, and do it in record time.
Thank you.
The interesting thing is that the last team that was here with the questions, with everything, they did it in 1 hour. I'm not saying, but I'm saying you've got your hour. Continue.
Thank you, Honorable Chair. Honorable members, as already my chair said, my name is Levi Rappel, and I'm chief executive for the SADPMR. My presentation will be as follows: the outline of it. I'll give you a brief background and I'll also go into the relevant service delivery outcomes, vision and mission, strategic objectives that are linked to the DMR, because we are an entity of DMR, and of course now the main, I'll go into the SADP MRMTF plan, that is the strat plan itself, and we'll end up with the budget allocation and the challenges that we experienced, and of course also the progress in terms of achievements and the conclusions. Pre 2007, the SADP MR did not exist. It was what used to be the South African Diamond.
Yes, which document are you using?
That's why in front of me there is this one.
We've got this one.
No, there is another one written FA.
Yeah, we've got the wrong things here.
That is the state I'm on.
Oh, you just got the same problem.
check it, Honorable. What are you really doing?
No, I've got the wrong one.
Okay.
At least it doesn't require a tablet. Thank you, Chair. Just to reiterate again, what we are presenting here is just a brief of the actual strategy that was submitted in February. So this is just but it touches in all the areas of that strategy that was submitted. So I was just starting by saying that pre-2007, what used to regulate the diamond industry is what used to be called the South African Diamond Board. And then after 2007, there were other amendments that were done to the Diamond Act, Act 56 of 1986, which allowed to the current regulator. It is captured in the, I'm just saying so that you understand where we come from. So the Diamond Board was actually established in terms of the Diamond Act to make sure that the diamonds in South Africa are exploited in the best interest of the country and to promote sound development of diamond opportunities in the Republic. Also to regulate the trade of diamonds in the industry. This meant that the unpolished diamonds attracted 15% export levy, which was the actual levy for SARS or for National Treasury administered on behalf of them by this South African Diamond Board, which was a private entity. Government had very little say to this entity, and they used some of the levies that they actually imposed to the industry to actually pay for the running of the organization. Now, in 2005, there were two amendments to the Diamond Act, the Principal Act. The first amendment, which was the Act 29 of 2005, and the second amendment, which was the Act 30 of 2005. I'm going to come back to them categorically as I go, just for you to understand what was the first amendment meant for. I think government now realized that some of the priorities or the objectives that they would want to see change. The South African Diamond Board did not necessarily have those mandates, so the government change decided to take over. So pre-2007, from 2007, July, the regulator was created by the first amendment. The first amendment was meant to create the regulator, the South African, what is now South African Diamond and Precious Metals Regulator. And their main functions was to ensure the diamond resources are exploited in the best interest of people of South Africa, also bringing to the element of a transformation to promote equitable access to and local beneficiation of the Republic, of the Republic's diamonds, also to ensure compliance with the Kimberley Process Certification Scheme, which I will outline at the later stage what the Kimberley Process is and where we come with it. And also to adhere to the objectives of the broad-based socio-economic empowerment, as prescribed in the Charter. Also, also the establishment of the Diamond Exchange and Export Center, a state-owned Diamond Exchange Center that is accessible to all the diamond license holders to facilitate the trade of diamonds. Now this is still a background. This was now mandated by the Second Amendment. I'm saying it does not appear there what the Second and First Amendment meant for. So from this bullet, the Second Amendment was meant to create the Diamond Exchange and Export Center. It's just like in other countries, what they refer to the diamond exchanges, like your Dubai, your Antwerp diamond exchange centers. And also, at the same time, also to create the state diamond trade, to make it possible for this state entity to acquire diamonds to distribute to the beneficiaries, particularly the upcoming and historically disadvantaged new incomings. The coming into effect of this also allowed for the diamond export levy of 2007, Act Number 14 of 2007, which provided for the imposition of an export levy on unpolished diamonds, but not including synthetic diamonds, and allow for offset with respect to that levy, which is currently at 5% to the export of unpolished diamonds. I'm going to explain a little bit so that this does not confuse you. First, there was a 15% levy, but the government says, producers, if you give beneficiaries a certain percentage, we will exempt you from that 15%. Right now, that administrative levy came reduced it to 5%. If you afford 15% of your diamonds to the beneficiaries, and on record when you check, it has been done, then you don't have to pay this 5% if you do your export, because it is taken that you have promoted beneficiation in the country. So that when you come to that one, you just understand the 15 and the 5%. And also the establishment of a Diamond Export Levy Administration Act, Act Number 15, which provided for the administrative matters in connection with the imposition of every export levy on unpolished diamonds, again excluding the synthetic diamonds. The precious and the SADC PMR is funded by monies appropriated by Parliament, and it is that the two legislation that are that they are regulating is the Diamond Act and the Precious Metals Act. How the precious metals came into effect? Previously, the precious metals were administered in terms of the Mining Rights Act, Act 20 of 1967. Now, in 2005, also there was not an amendment, but an introduction of a new act, the New Precious Metals Act of 2005, which actually repealed this Act 20 of 1967. That's when it was also incorporated to the SADPMR to regulate. Previously, the SADB was just regulating the diamonds. Still continuing on the background, I've already said it, that Act Number 37 of 2005, the precious metals, and its main functions and responsibilities is to ensure that precious metals resources of the Republic are exploited and developed in the best interest of the people of South Africa, also now as the diamonds, also to promote equitable access, which is an element that need to address transformation, to promote sound development of precious metal enterprises in the Republic, and again to advance the objectives of the broad-based resource socio-economic empowerment charter as prescribed. The regulator consists of two units, or let me call them two branches. The first one is the regulatory compliance, which consists of the licensing division, the diamond inspection, and the precious metals and beneficiation. Outlined there is just the functions of those units. Under licensing, they are responsible for processing applications for both diamonds and precious metals, and there are overall 12 different types of licenses that can be applied for both from the diamonds and the precious metals. Also, licensing is the anchor of implementing the requirements of the mining charter, because when you do this application,
there's a commitment that we have to done, we have to do in terms of the requirements of the charter to say, how are you going to do skilling of your employees, including generally what we normally refer to the social responsibility, also outside where you're operating, and also to regulate compliance inspection as conducted, and clients to monitor progress of the license conditions and commitments. That is the duties of the licensing division. The diamond inspectors, when there's an application, what they will first do is to do an inspection to verify the premises of such an application, and also they will collate the diamonds listed on buying and selling activities. But generally, they will also, after the approval or the granting of the license, do monitoring in terms of what the law requires to be complied to. The last one is the precious metals and beneficiation. It also is responsible for conducting inspections on shipments for import and export of precious metals. To conduct inspections on new, as the other ones as well, an existing business of precious metals, but also to provide guidance and advice on beneficiation of precious metals. The other program is what we call the diamond trade. The diamond trade consists of the diamond exchange and export center, which I refer to the second amendment made room for its implementation or its creation or its establishment. Now, the responsibilities of it is to facilitate the buying, the selling, the exporting and importing of diamond in the Republic. More this is in line is actually with what the Kimberley process requires. You all could remember that in the past there was a big outcry and concern about the diamonds that were used to undermine the legitimacy of sovereign countries, particularly in Africa, and hence this Kimberley process was created. I'll say more about it. But further than that, the DEC plays a very important role in the diamond industry by ensuring that the entire process of tendering, which is one of their key functions, is handled with integrity and strictly in accordance with the legislation. Where the tenders comes in, the law requires that second amendment. It made provision that all the rough diamonds that are intended for export must be submitted to the DEEC for minimum of 4 days on a tender in order to make sure that if local beneficiaries are able to buy these diamonds for local beneficiaries, that should happen before those diamonds can go. So the normal process, the normal procedure is that you cannot export the diamonds from South Africa without bringing them to the DEEC. So the DEEC is a one-stop shop for all export and all imports. The imports, they handle them generally as they come and do the process that they want. Now, in implementing the requirements of the KPCS, which stands for the Kimberley Process Certification Scheme, let me just give you a little bit background of the Kimberley process. I've already said it's an international forum which was created by many countries, member countries, but at the initiation, and a lot of people will say that the southern African countries, but South Africa took the lead in 2002 by calling other neighboring countries to come and say, we are the producers. The African continent is responsible for 60% of the world production of diamonds. And South Africa, because of what was happening in the other countries like Angola, Sierra Leone, where rebel movements were using capturing the diamond fields and using these diamonds for buying armaments to undermine, as I've said, these sovereign governments. South Africa called all these countries and they converged into the town of Kimberley, hence the name of Kimberley Process Certification. And eventually, from there, the meetings were held in other countries. I think one was Switzerland, New Zealand, I'm not sure. But after that, it eventually came back to South Africa, and everybody agreed that the Kimberley certificate, the Kimberley Process Certification Scheme, will be implemented from 2003 under the leadership of South Africa, as they are the one that actually led and initiated this process. And then from the 1st of January 2003, South Africa was the chair for the whole year. The Kimberley process changes chairship every year. We have been chairing it for 10 years until last year. That is why honorable members could have maybe seen that last year that member countries, we now have on record, although there on the slide you see 54 countries, it's not actually 54 countries. One country that is counted for many, many countries is the EU. That makes it. But in all other countries, we have about a membership of 86 when you sum up with the individual countries that belong to the European Commission. Last year, we celebrated the 10th year. Everybody agreed that we must go back to South Africa to the birth of the Kimberley Process Certification. And there were two important meetings that were held. One was in Kimberley, and one was in November, and South Africa successfully hosted all these two meetings. And I can reassure you that you can prize, because everybody was ululating the manner in which they were hosted last year. Now, that is mostly the, you can see the, I'm talking about the certification, how successful it was. It now certify more than 98% of global diamonds, which means there's very little diamonds now that come from illicit. Whenever it happens, for an example, right now, the Central African Republic have been suspended. Those that do not comply to this scheme, they get suspended until they comply to what we call the minimum requirements of the KB, and then they can now come back again. There are committees that are responsible, about six committees, South Africa is now chairing. For the first time, it's a new committee, which was an amalgamation of the committee in participation and chairship, which means the chairship is the committee that will choose the chair for the Kimberley process for the next year. Now, these two committees were amalgamated last year, and through the decision of the plenary, which is a very important meeting of the Kimberley process last year here in November, that decision was taken, and South Africa was now appointed again to chair this particular committee for the Kimberley process for this year. The last program, no, still on the diamond trade, we have what we call the government diamond valuator. The government diamond valuators are responsible to do evaluation when rough diamonds comes in, to make sure that the value of those diamonds before they leave the country represent, because the owners will give you a value, represents the fair market value of what is in the world market. They also examine the polished diamonds as they come in and as they go out, for us to have an indication of what is the value that is going out and what is the value that has come out, but is it a fair value, and so on. They also play a very important role. It's a requirement of legislation in terms of that, the Second Amendment, that the DDV will actually verify the 10% that every producer must give to the state diamond trader of all their 100% production. So the state diamond trader will choose, will go there, choose the 10% from the 100%. The regulator, through its GDV, will go there, evaluate the whole 100%, check the 10%, and verify if it's a true representative of what has been chosen from that production. So it is a legislative requirement. It also helps the South African police service as they confiscate diamonds from people who would be in possession of diamonds without license, because our laws do not allow that. The police will call us and we'll do a verification. Number one, we'll verify if it's a diamond. And after that, we'll do evaluation. And eventually, we'll have to write an affidavit. If it goes to court, we go there through that affidavit to say, yes, we confirm that these are diamonds. So those are the duties of the the government diamond province. Now, coming into the strategic plan, I've spoken about the relevant national outcomes to the SADPMR. I'm not going to go into detail. We all know the national outcomes of the country. We have identified outcome number 4, outcome number 7, outcome number 11, and outcome number 12 in terms of our mandate as to these are the outcomes that we think we can deliver government priorities in terms of the national development plan as needed. And as I've said, as we report to the DMR, we linked first this before we could even link them with the national development plan with the DMR. So those are the national outcomes that I was just outlining. They are going to appear again. But first, let me just outline what our vision is. Our vision is to be a leading regulator for business excellence, transformation, and economic empowerment in the diamond and precious metal sector. And our mission is to render regulatory services by ensuring and promoting compliance with legislation, skills development and knowledge sharing, business development support and growth, equitable access to resources for local beneficiaries. And our values are integrity, respect, time management, accuracy, and consistency. Our strategic objectives, as outlined there by those 5 bullets, the first one is to improve competitiveness, sustainable development, and job creation in the diamond and precious metal industry, to transform the diamond and precious metal sectors, to promote equitable access to resources for local beneficiation. Beneficiation is a very, very important aspect of this country, and to enforce compliance with the legislative requirements and to improve organizational capacity for maximum execution for excellence. Now, going back, linking those national outcomes with the DMR, there in that table that you see, I've outlined the national outcome, and those are the outcome that I've identified as those 4, and the DMR program that we link to in order to comply to that outcome, which is decent employment through inclusive economic growth. And we are saying our strategic objective, which says to improve competitiveness, sustainable growth, and job creation in the diamond links with DMR program number 3. And it is as outlined there. You can see I've itemized them there, which ones do we align ourselves to. Now, after we have done that now, very important, as you know, that actually it's a requirement of Parliament that we must now link whatever it's our objectives to the national development plan. It must be linked, otherwise then it will lose its purpose. Because if government has said the national development says so, we have to link our objectives to speak to that development plan. Now, those are the SADPMR strategic objectives, and I'm saying the first objective there to improve competitiveness, we link it to the national priorities, development plan, raising employment through faster economic growth, and the national development plan focus area is support for all business through better coordination. I'm not going to read them. We have, as members, one of our members can see them. We have linked them as we have linked them, like we have linked them. Now, coming to the MTF plan of the SADPMR, that is the actual now main reason why we are here today, honorable members. Starting with, and Chairperson, I will also go fast because if I go to all the numbers and the lines, I'm sure you can see, but you can ask whatever question as we have the numbers. Our first strategic objective there that I outlined, to improve competitive, sustainable development and job creation in the diamond precious metal. What is important for the next 3 years, now 14-5, which we are in, 15-16 and 16-17, what is it that we are committing? Those numbers are the targets that we are saying. These are the numbers that we are committing to achieve. And what is the measure? The initiative first. How are we going to arrive at that? And the initiative says to to implement broad-based socio-economic empowerment charter and beneficiary strategy, which is a policy of government as well generally. And we are saying, how are we going to measure that? The number of licenses issued to enable the diamond and precious metal trade in accordance with the legislative framework. But being guided by the broad-based socio-economic empowerment as you issue those licenses. And, of course, the expected outcome, as it says there, we must see job creations, we must see skills developed, we must see value addition to precious and diamond commodities. As I've said, unless members want me to go through, in the interest of time, Chairperson, I've explained one, I can explain each and every one, but it, maybe it will take us more time. But it's not a long presentation. And that is it again, the continuation of it with the numbers there, everything, those are the numbers that we say we are committing. Perhaps maybe there could be questions relating to those numbers, but I think I will just pass because I think it speaks for itself as it is. Unless indicated, Chairperson, I can go through each and every one of them. There's five of them. There's still an outline. It's continuing that. Where you see the 100%, let me explain, to improve organization capacity for maximum execution of excellence. And we say percentage of matters referred to, for an example, in this particular one, legal advice and opinions addressed with 30 days. What we are saying, what is a legal requirement? You cannot do it by half. We have to, it has to be fully compliant because before that you saw numbers. Here now you are seeing percentages. It's those things that we say you can't do them 5%, 10%. You have to do them in terms of what the law requires, which is 100%. That is now our budget versus our budget allocation for SADPMR for that MTEF period, 14-15, and of course the one for the following years. I'm going to come back to this because what I want to show you, the allocation from government is 47 million for this year, but our requirement in terms of what we see the service that we must provide, it warrants for 79, let's say 80 million. So what we get from government is 47, but I will come back to this and explain how do we survive to come to that when I speak about the challenges. Remarks, challenges, inadequate budget allocation, and I think we can go back there. As you see there, it says 47. However, what is very important, and I think members, we have been reporting every year about this, but we did a lot in the past years to make sure that we come up with other mechanisms of revenue generation. And last year, we realized that when the regulator was taken over from the board, there were other benefits that were supposed to be carried on, but I think they, for some reason, they were left out. I think with the hope that government was going to fund everything. And with this inadequate allocation, it made us to look back into actually how the old board survived. And fortunately, we found some things. And now, from last year, we are generating revenue from what the law actually mandates, that for the job or for the performance that the GDV, which is your government diamond valuator, said, perform on this valuation, there's a percentage that must be paid of the total value. And that helps us now to cover the gap. That is a big gap. However, also I can mention to you that the current board has taken a very stand, you know, a very firm stand that we must look at how other means of generating revenue so that we do not rely just on government, seeing that government has got quite a lot of responsibilities and, of course, the budget that is not necessarily available for all the responsibilities that they must incur. So That 80 million, let it not surprise you, it's from what comes from the revenue generation that we are doing. But we're doing nothing from under the table. Everything is on board. It's allowed by the law. The other challenge is the declining. It's the declining diamond industry, and of course the precious metals. I think that is a common call that we all know about. From 2008, there was an economic crunch of all minerals, but the diamond industry was highly affected. It is coming up, but things don't just come up as they were before. It's taking still a deep, and you have all seen what has been happening to the gold and the diamond industries. There has been that deep, but we believe that things will. We're doing all our best as a state entity to improve whatever situation we can improve. And other challenges is the complexities with regard to the beneficiation of precious metals. What I mean by this, precious metals, as we all know, their beneficiation is very complex. Take, for example, the diamond, the platinum. What I mean here is the technology to beneficiate these commodities. It requires a very high capex, and as such, it's still a challenge for us to make sure that the previously disadvantaged, in terms of what the charter requires, go easily into that. It's not an easy thing like the diamonds. So, but we are looking into it. We are working on it. For us, putting it here, we are not saying it's hand up. We are just saying that those complexities, which are the challenges, but we have plans and we have modalities that we now engaging, of course, with industry, because they have a social responsibility in terms of the charter, which they are signatory to. So those are the challenges that we have. But also, again, we lack inadequate access to rough diamonds by beneficiaries. For beneficiaries, what I mean by that, I've spoken about the state diamond trader, but what I didn't say, what the law actually authorizes, is that the law requires that every producer must give the state diamond trader, not give, but provide. The state diamond trader will pay for it, 10% of the total production, but it specifically says 10% of run of mine. Now, your run of mine in this country, it's diamonds of quality and diamonds of poor quality. The majority is diamonds of poor quality going into your nellies, which is like powder, which becomes very difficult in terms of cost of beneficiation of diamonds in this country to can beneficiate those small diamonds, which end up maybe finding their way to those who can manage them in terms of cost of labor in their countries like India. Those are our challenges, but remarks also, as I've already indicated, that we have introduced service charges in accordance with legislation to defray and to cover for shortfall, and we have also increased trade transaction on unpolished and polished diamonds at the Diamond Export and Exchange Center, and we have also something that was also not done also, although I did not put it in here. We have also introduced facilitating the marketing for the polished diamonds, particularly for the, but we do it for everybody, but particularly for those who are struggling to get the market, because remember, history tells and history prevails that those who were in these markets were entrenched in those markets, and as such, the newcomers would have difficulty in those markets. So the regulator have seen this niche to assist them, and we are continuing, and we want to actually escalate that from this year going onward. Also, strengthening good working relationship between the SAD chairman and diamond and precious metal industry. We saw that gap, that there was no communication. Maybe it comes from the history that the old diamond board was the regulator, but you'd find that the people who were actually regulating in that were also industry players, which becomes monotonous, because it means now you're regulating yourself. So we are trying also now to bridge that relationship that was there, that existed between the industry and the South African Diamond and Precious Metal Regulator. In conclusion, I've already mentioned the stand that my board takes, and realizing that some of the achievements which were not achieved, which the charter wanted to have achieved, and you know generally, not only here, the charter, including in the department, there's very little or no achievement in certain fields that the charter wanted to realize. I've already said my board have taken a stand, a very strong stand, and as such they have also introduced a new marsha by mandating one of the committees to look into transformation and report on transformation on a regular basis to the board. And emphasis has been looked at the job creation, increasing access to rough diamonds by beneficiaries, which we are busy doing, talking to all producers, and of course, what is the requirement of licensing as well, skills development and access to markets. I've already said we are helping those that cannot reach the markets to access those markets. We'll be helping them going into the where the market is, especially the diamonds in Asia. We are definitely going to market them, and I believe in the future, Chair, we will have to report what we are articulating here. We'll have to report some achievement or success or progress wherever we will be in the future. As I've already said, we have commenced with implementation of the plan, engaging diamond producers, and of course, as well, we facilitate the tenders for polished diamonds at the DC, and we will do that by actually marketing them overseas for those who are the market in this regard. And that sums up my presentation on behalf of the South African Diamond Precious Metals Regulator, Chair. And thank you very much for giving us this opportunity. We are not a big organization. I think our staff complement is about 120, and majority of them, probably 80%, is women. There's very little men. And all of them are trained. Diamond skin, it's a scarce skin. So all of them we trained. And our staff turnover is very, very little. I did not work the percentage, but it's far less than 5%. Thank you very much. Sorry, Chair, before I also invite the committee to understand how the regulator, I will ask my chairperson to formally extend that invitation to the Chair of this committee to visit the regulator and understand the modus operandi of the regulator. Thank you, Chair.
Thank you very much. Are there any additions from your team? You are on record time.
No, there are no additions. I've covered everything. They are here. They are here to assist if there are questions and also to take questions, but we have covered everything.
Colleagues, honorable members, there is a presentation from the regulator. Any questions of clarity? Honorable Malema, honorable Mafalo, any other questions? Because I know when the answers are given, then people will start to feel, yeah. Are there any other questions of the clarity? Okay. There are only two for now.
Thanks, Jay. I just want to ask about the phenomenon of transfer pricing. I heard you saying you evaluate and check if indeed the price which people sell or buy is the real price. But the regulator will know that you can't trust especially white monopoly capital when it comes to these mineral resources. They sell at a very, very low price, create an impression that they are selling to the outside companies, but the reality is that they are trading to themselves because they've got those accounts outside and they pay very low taxes in South Africa. Has the regulator investigated the transfer pricing and if it is also affecting the diamond industry? The other thing you're saying, you are getting 10% of what they produce. How do you know that it's 10%? Because these people are crooks, especially monopoly capital. How do you know that indeed this is a 10% of the production of diamond in South Africa? What mechanism do you put in place if I've got a diamond mine and tell you I've produced so much and the reality is that I've actually produced more than that? What mechanism have you put in place to ensure that indeed the figures given to you are the correct and true reflection of the production and you receive your correct 10%? The last point is beneficiation. What are you whose minerals are you beneficiating? Do you have minerals beyond the 10%? Do you mine diamonds? Because we can't talk about beneficiation of minerals we do not own. We may think we are telling a very good and successful story of 10%. We'll deal with the department and policymakers on. I don't agree with 10%. We must take more of that. That those are our precious minerals. We need more of that. But if you do not own these minerals and you want to benefit, and the reality is that you are not getting correct figures of what is the production? Have we looked at the possibility of ownership and control of those precious and diamonds? Because I think for me, in the long run, we need to take control of our mineral resources, including the diamond and precious minerals. And then the other thing, CEO, I heard you struggling and trying to, I don't know, maybe you are a good guy, you be trying to be polite. You must never apologize for the empowerment of black people. And when you talk about them, you must talk about them openly and freely. Don't talk about those ones who were there in the past and were helping those who were not there. We want to know how you are helping black people, particularly Africans, who have been deliberately excluded from this type of economic activity, which has been taking place for quite some time and manipulated by the Oppenheimers and groups. We want our people to take part. And in future, when you come, correctly so you said, you'll come and give an account of how many of the previously disadvantaged people you helped to sell their things and all that. But we need those figures. In terms of transformation, blacks and Africans in particular, are you making inroads? Are they becoming the real players in the diamond business? We need blacks and Africans in particular to play a role, and there must never be an apology about that. We know that the system has excluded our people for a very long time, and this is the turn where blacks must benefit from these types of economic activities, especially in areas where you are involved. Your responsibility will be to hold their hand and make sure that they become a successful story, and that successful story will encourage many other black people who will now want to be engaged in this field of the economy, because they think it is exclusively available for the white minority. And if we are not going to put a deliberate effort and program to create a real successful story of the African majority and tell that story out there, our people will deliberately not get involved because they will think it's an area of white minorities. Thanks.
Yeah, thank you, Chairperson. Let me welcome the the presentation by the CEO. Chairperson, mine is, I'm a little bit worried when we don't have a your staff component copy. I really wish to have to look on that. You have just mentioned that now that 80% woman, what we want to see that. And then my question is on page 10. We are talking about the relevant national outcomes to the SAD PMR. I just want to know how many do you have? Do you have 12? As you had chosen only four there. And then on page 16, a number of licenses issued. I want to know about like a person with somewhere there who doesn't know how to apply for a license. How do you help those people? Are you waiting for, especially when they don't know the procedures, do you help them, or you are only helping those who are applying? And then how long does it take for a license to be issued? The application is taking for how long? And then I welcome the efforts that you are making of helping people to put them on the market, to help them to sell. But I heard you talking about the import and the export. So I just want to understand that from this 250, is it only the here in the country or is it globally? Thank you.
Thank you very much. Thanks, Milon, Honorable Malema. Your first question on the phenomenon of fair pricing, how it is done? There's a process that they do, and you use the internet and the rapport to look at what is happening every month in the world, the sale of diamonds. And the GDV, they know how to contract that and produce their own price book, which is the same as the international one. That shows these are the fair markets. So when they look at the diamonds, they actually look at, they don't look at the figures. They look at the diamonds physically. And that will also come and answer the question of the 10%. We don't look at the papers. We look at the diamonds. If we say the 10% of the state diamond rate, the whole production must be here. The whole production of the beers for the next cycle, whether it's 2 months or 3 months, they have to put it on the table. And the evaluators must come and look at each parcel by parcel, put the notes and say how much is this in terms of their price book, not in terms of anybody's price book, in terms of what we develop on a monthly basis for the whole year, based on the world markets. We have subscribed to these international things like your Rapport to see what is happening in other exchanges in the world, and we do that. I hope that satisfies you, and that also answers the 10%, because we look at the whole production, and then we look at the value of that production, and we look at what is chosen as 10%, because sometimes you can have one diamond which is 500 carats. There, the two organizations, the company and the state administrator will have to talk as to how they should, come up upon the 10%. The question of what are you beneficiating, which you don't owe? We are not beneficiating. We are regulating beneficiation. For an example, if you want to refine gold, you will apply to us. And we will regulate that refinery, that everything is done in terms of what the requirements of the law, particularly which will be informed now by the beneficiation strategy that was approved by Parliament last year, which is now receiving an unpacking by the department as to various, because it's not only for diamonds, all minerals that must be beneficiated. The department is busy now categorizing as to how it must be done for this commodity, how it must be done for this commodity. So we are just regulating to make sure that the requirements of the law are there too.
And the other one, the empowerment of the black people. Yes, I must you will see it. I must confirm to you, I'm very passionate when it comes to disempowerment. I don't shy. And I'm saying that we have put measures because we have realized since I have been with the regulator that there were a lot of window dressing by a lot of companies, putting people there, but when you go and check, they are not there, actually. And this is what we have found, and this is what the board also has put this transformation. We need a report on a regular basis. And to that effect, I also have created a unit that will do with transformation. As the others will be doing the inspection, they will also be following them to come and report to me to see if I'm getting the true reflection of the others. Because there's a commitment. It is in my performance agreement to the board that this is the things that I will do. I don't shy. I'm very much passionate about it. I hope I've answered all your questions. Thank you very much. Let me go to Honorable Mafula. Thank you very much. The national outcome, how many? I think there are 12 national outcomes. Not everything is relevant to us. You will find some of the national outcomes that talk about the environment. We cannot take that one because our mandate is not on environmental responsibility. And others will talk about health and safety. We cannot take that one. We look at in the industry. Perhaps maybe I should have explained that the regulator is actually responsible. We're talking about platinum gold, but I've said it, we only regulate the trading part, the downstream, which is when you start now doing the beneficiation. But the diamonds, as soon as you take them from the ground, in terms of the Kimberley process, as you move them, they move from Kimberley, they come to Cape Town, immediately there, the regulator has to be there. You have to have some license that allows you to be in possession of diamonds. So those outcomes that we've chosen is the one that will link in terms of our objective. The others would not be able because of the mandate that we don't have to do that. How do we help this is one area, Honorable Mafula, that we still want to improve, but we've started something. We have rail road shows into provinces. Last year, and I think the past 2 years, our people have realized that mostly our people, like you saying, they would not know what the regulator is. So first of all, we want the people to know what the regulator is doing. Because it's only those that have been in this business that will come and apply. So we are starting, we are going to colleges now. If you read when you have time, you'll see that some of our commitments or our targets there is students. So we go to students. Some students of ours, they qualify, but then they are on the streets. So we want to take them by the hand, like you say. There's specific managers that have identified these students. Of course, based on our size, we cannot take, but we think we can make an impact, particularly in the jewelry manufacturing, which the department launched, I think, last year, a forum, to say that we need to put our people into the jewelry manufacturing. So that's a mammoth of a work. I'm saying this, bear with us, but we, whatever percentage that we achieve, we will come and report that we are here. It's a big job, it's not easy, based on the history. But having gone up to where we are and having identified those, we think now we're in the position now to tackle these issues. I'm not sure what was the other one. Did I answer all of them? The time, we have a time frame, very straight to that time frame. We have improved. It was not like that before. You would have things that were backlog for 6 months to a year, particularly from the time when the regulator took from the old board. You know, we got the stagger, but we have finished that. We have eradicated that. Our time frame for a license is 2 months. 2 months. And we're strict. I'm very strict on that. We try to adapt to that. The appeal. Just ask it, Honorable Marshall, again, the appeal. I didn't catch it.
I was looking at it and you want to make a follow-up.
Yes, sir.
You are allowed, Honorable.
Maybe if the board has rejected your application, is there any appeal on that?
Fortunately, like the board in the department is like the minister. If the DG is allowed to have a mandate to issue the licenses, I have an operational mandate by the law itself to process and to issue. If there's an appeal, it will go to the board. There is a provision for appeal, and also to the minister. Yes, thank you.
Anyway, it's your meeting, so I can't. It was tomorrow. Just one issue that I think, because this question, I don't know. You might have made an error. I note you, Honorable Minister. In your budget reserve allocation, I understand you've got an allocation 2014-2015, which is the current financial year, and the rest. And when you look on your projected, then there's projected revenue. When you do the calculation of your projected revenue versus your allocation, somebody may arrive at a different conclusion on the actual figure. Except if you say the allocation is the revenue projected specifically accrued from you, is a difference of the total revenue vis-a-vis the allocation. Because in your allocation you've got 47 million. Then you say the projected revenue is 80 million. Then the projected expenditure is 79. And then you say the surplus will be 631. Now, I'm saying, I'm sure somewhere there, the actual missing figure will be your projected revenue, not the total revenue that you are having. I thought that could be an error. Honorable Mdang.
Thank you, Chairperson. Are we allowed, as the members of parliament, to apply for a license?
Honorable Chair, it's a difficult question for me, but I understand members of parliament, as long as they declare whatever, then it is allowed, as long as you, whatever you have, you will declare to parliament. Sorry, Honorable Chair, can I, just as you said, can I be democratic and let the finance manager respond to this?
Thank you, Chair, Honorable Member. The on that slide, slide number 21, what we wanted to show the members is that the value or the grant that we receive is 47. But however, our projected revenue, including the grant, is 80. So the difference is an in-house generated revenue that the regulators paid to do. Thank you.
That's fine. But next time, do the calculation of that difference so that you make it easier for members to understand.
Thank you very much.
Hey, now I can see the Chair, you did your job. You are on record time. Now to round up and do your own closer on with your team. You have that privilege because your team has did it on time. Thank you.
Thank you very much, Chair. Honorable Chair. The team has presented the numbers. We just two apologies from ourselves in terms of the staff compliment. However, I'm sure you will receive our latest annual report, which is out as at the end of August, and it will be circulated to members, so you will find a very detailed staff compliment, the structure, the late women in the industry and participating, and also on the board. So on that note, we hope we will exonerate ourselves. The other issue I wanted to address, Chair, is on transformation. We are really attempting to make headway there with as much difficulty as the CEO has indicated by tightening largely on the manner in which the licenses are approved and awarded, and also bringing in inspections to actually attest that after you've walked away with a particular license, do you keep to that arrangement throughout the trading period that we have awarded to you? So I'm hoping that members, even when they do apply, they will keep to the same terms as regulators. The jewelry forum that was mentioned by the CEO is also an attempt on transformation. It was done in partnership with the department, where we are attempting to create an incubation so that we can bring more participants into the industry, and not only just the diamond, but to actually look at the precious metals as well, as it is a combination of the activities. So in as far as the transformation activities are concerned, we would appreciate also greater campaigns from members as well in some of the activities that we do in the attempt to promote transformation. Thank you very much, Chair.
Thank you very much. Well done. From diamond and precious metals regulator to the actual diamond trader. You will do as usual, obviously, in terms of introducing your teams. I'm told the copy, you don't have the copy. You want coffee? Right. You want a short break? Take your 5 minutes break. Stretch your legs. 5 minutes. If this committee, you must be preparing and finalizing. Thank you.